Welcome, everyone, to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley, a national news and talk program dedicated to military veterans issues. And now, your hosts, David Corey and Richard Hurley.
Good evening. Welcome to the Veterans News Hour for August 31st, 2020. This is Air Force veteran David Corey, along with my co-host, Richard Hurley. Thanks for joining us this evening. We have three special segments on our show tonight. The first segment is a VA panel discussion of women veterans discussing issues and resources specifically affecting women veterans. Among the panelists is retired Air Force Colonel Wanda Wright, the head of the Arizona State Department of Veterans Services, who also was a guest on our show a few years ago. The second segment of our show tonight is about the Board of Veterans Appeals and the VA's Appeals Modernization Program. And then the third segment tonight is about benefits specifically for veterans of the Reserve and National Guard components of the military. Before starting, let's first go to my co-host, Richard Hurley. Hello, Rick. How's it going?
Good, David. How's everybody doing out there? And how are you doing, David?
Okay.
I hope everyone's doing well in this tough times we're living in right now. Just seems like it's getting pretty monotonous, but every day is a new adventure. I want to remind everyone that this is a call-in show that welcomes your views, your comments, and your questions. So you can call us at any time during the show at 1-888-627-6008. Again, that toll-free call-in number is 1-888-627-6008. We got three great segments to play, so I'm going to go back to David, and let's get started.
In our first segment this evening.
Good afternoon, and thank you for joining us on today's VA Facebook Live event. My name is Linda Davis, and I'm VA's Chief Veteran Experience Officer and a proud Army veteran. Today, you're going to hear from four amazing women veterans who are accomplished and respected leaders in their fields. They advocate for veterans just like you and I do every day. I'm grateful for the progress VA is making in prioritizing customer service under the leadership of Secretary Robert Wilkie, and now with the strong support of Acting Deputy Secretary Pam Powers, the first woman veteran to hold that critical position. And we know together we can do even more to serve those who have served, especially our women veterans, who now make up 9.5% of the 20 million veterans alive today. At VA, we're committed to being even more responsive to this rapidly growing population of women veterans, whether they are patients at our VA medical facilities across the country or are seeking benefit support for education, employment, or housing. It is my great honor to introduce today's guests, Army veteran Jill Baker, Army veteran Sergeant Major Michelle Jones, Marine Corps veteran Captain Kata Rodriguez, and Air Force and National Guard veteran Colonel Wanda Wright. Ladies, welcome and thank you for your time today. I would like to encourage those viewing this virtual panel to ask questions by using the chat box on this video. We will respond to as many of you as possible. We also always appreciate hearing from you through our Office of Women Veterans. Now, let's begin.
What are the most pressing issues women veterans are bringing to our attention? And what resources do you recommend as most helpful for these pertinent issues?
One of the most important ones that I will say is opportunities. Opportunities in a place and space of employment. Too many times a company say that they are veteran friendly, but the question is whether or not they're friends with veterans. And what I mean by that, particularly women veterans, when they offer positions, are they just jobs or are they career positions? Are the salaries, are the benefits the same as for their male counterparts? Too often not. When they talk about senior leaders in their key positions within their organizations, take a poll, find out whether or not they are women in those positions. Too often they are not. The second piece is homelessness. Homelessness, yes, in the street. Homelessness living in the car with the children. But just as important, if not more so, and I shouldn't say more so, but is often common or more common, are women that are living in a place that is not their own home. It could be a family member. It could be a friend. It could be some place in space that is not their home. They don't have the economic power to get to where they want to be. They don't have the economic power to stay or sustain or to exceed where they want to be.
I think that for women veterans, some of the most pressing issues are really related to transitioning from the military into the civilian sector and finding the same level of support, the same sense of community, the same sense of purpose that we had while we were on active duty. And I think all veterans experience that, but women in particular have some very unique challenges. One of them being that women tend to shy away from asking for help, as we're so used to, you know, taking care of ourselves, taking care of children, potentially taking care of families, kind of serving as that kind of backbone. And so transitioning out of the military, I think a lot of women oftentimes working to meet other people's needs or have learned to take care of other people's needs, oftentimes fail to take care of their own needs, whether it's the need for social support, whether it's a need to establish relationships that will allow them to really excel when they're looking for employment.
So some of the most pressing issues that women veterans are facing at this time are unemployment, underemployment, and housing instability. We have a program here called Be Connected, and it is a resource network for issues that might be affecting veterans across the state of Arizona. What we found through that process is that although we aren't getting a significant increase in number of calls, the calls we are getting are of a higher acuity, meaning that there are a lot more problems with each call, and they can be anywhere from financial instability, morale issues, it can be underemployment, unemployment, housing instability, and a number of other issues that may come up with veterans in their lives. What we're also seeing is that women veterans don't always understand their eligibility of services and benefits through the federal VA or the state departments of veteran affairs. And it's important that women have that access and do understand all of those eligibility that they are enabled to get. And so we want to just make sure that they understand all of those services and benefits offered through those departments. Now, some of the resources that are available, we want to engage with women veterans program managers at each of the VA hospitals and the VA regional offices, and even at the State Department of Veteran Affairs. Those are very good advocates for women veterans when they are having needs that need to be assisted with. And so we just want to make sure that everybody understands that those individuals are available to them. In every state, there are either county or state veteran service officers that can support women through filing claims on their behalf for a disability or for pension, for that matter. And we want to make sure that women understand that they're veterans and that they can also file for disability that might have occurred during their military service. Another resource is the VA Center for Women Veterans. This is a VA resource, and it is a great resource for finding out information on services and benefits for women veterans. They acknowledge women veterans from across the nation. They have a lot of programs, and they also conduct conferences each year. And so I highly recommend you go to their webpage. And of course, there's local veteran service organizations within each state, and local community support for women in each state. And so I highly recommend you look into all of those.
So in April 2017, I facilitated a focus group, and I invited four target groups: women veterans, women who were currently serving, military spouses, and parents who had children in the military, particularly children who were daughters, their daughters were in the military. And we had a really good conversation, And out of that focus group came six pressing issues, which they identified. So I'm going to share those with you today. The first one was the transition from military to civilian employment, with the need for a vetted referral network of jobs for veterans, reservists, and military spouses. Number two, community support, social outlets for families, and a ladies' night. Resource and referral, a one-door statewide service 2-1-1 came out as being really important. And our CVEB is currently working toward solidifying a partnership with our state 2-1-1. A vehicle, and under that resource and referral, a vehicle, house, appliance, fixed referral list during times of need when spouses are deployed. Awareness, meaning a focus on the national level for female service members. That advocacy piece is what led me here today to speak on this panel. Family support, with a particularly important focus on child care resources. On the east side of South Dakota, we have reservists and National Guard, and so they don't have the type of military installation that our active duty do. And so that is a problem that they would like to work on. And then finally, a destigmatization of counseling and support services. So our CVEB has used this qualitative data since that time to really help steer our partnerships and collaborative relationships within South Dakota. And recently, there has been an interest at the state level, local level, and even some federal resources and national resources to help South Dakota develop a network of care for our veteran and military community. So I'm really excited to be part of that going forward. Question number two. We know from listening to women veterans, they have specific moments that matter. In your experience, what are the key moments that matter to women veterans in your communities or across your state?
Specific moments that matter. Let's talk about Veterans Day. Veterans Day, yes, it's a great day, and celebrations are many, and I am very grateful, as are all veterans. However, the difference in the women's service and why women should be highlighted is every woman that has ever served in the military volunteered. No woman was drafted. So our service is unique. And it continues to be unique. It's not a matter of mitigating or lessening or just saying that, oh, they're special because they're women. No, we are unique in the method in which we served, and the fact that the opportunities within the military were not always equal, but we continued to join. So that's the other thing. So Veterans Day, highlighting women is critical. The other thing is organizations that are doing the same thing. Have women out there. If you're part of an organization, and it doesn't have to be Veterans Day, but any day that recognizes the service of veterans, period.
From listening to women veterans, there are specific moments that matter. And I think that some of those are really is, as you look out to establish that connectivity, a lot of that is built on trust. So achieving that moment where you achieve that level of trust, that level of acceptance, that whatever the challenge is, it's something that can be worked through, but you can't do that unless you trust the person, the organization, the agency that you're working with to address any issues that you face. And so for women, being able to maybe find a mentor that they trust, whether it's finding a doctor that they trust to address their own personal needs, whether it's finding someone that they can trust to, you know, just to reach out to when they need some sort of emotional support. Those are all things that really matter in a person's life, in a woman's life, I think, and something that we should all strive to do. As a community, what we can do is to help women find those moments. And by what I say, you know, as I mentioned earlier, women sometimes don't reach out for help. And as community organizations, as government agencies, what we can do better is to, one, I of course identify the biggest challenges, but two, reach out in a way that actually connects with those women, making very deliberate, educated outreach initiatives or outreach efforts that are specifically targeted to meeting women where they are. You know, oftentimes we see that we have, you know, some types of event and they're very, very broad, and that's okay. I mean, there are a lot of different needs within the veteran community, within different age demographics, within, you know, different eras of veterans. But if we want to specifically target one in particular, then the way that we conduct that outreach must be in the same way that it can be received, in a way that will allow that person to trust the organization or the agency.
I try to listen to women veterans all the time. I am part of the VA Women Veteran Committee, and it's important for me to bring back information from women veterans to that committee so that we can help the VA address them. One of the things that we use in our state is the Women Veteran Expos, and we try to honor women where they are. So we take these little show on the road to localities all across Arizona. We help them understand their eligibility for services and benefits. We offer mindfulness kind of classes. We partner with the VA to bring in clinicians to talk about women-specific care. And those have been very beneficial in addressing specific issues in those moments that women need them. And we also recognize Women Veteran Day in our state. I think this is a really important thing to acknowledge when women began to serve across the nation. And we always are trying to remind women that as veterans, they matter too, and that they have all of these things available to them that they should take advantage of.
So, you know, we often talk about the transition from military to civilian life as if that's the most critical moment in a veteran's, that determines a veteran's outcome for health and wellness. But I think it's much more complex than that. I think it's important to address a veteran's life transitions over time, such as going to college with undiagnosed mental health issues, or becoming a parent, getting married, or finding a job where you don't feel stigmatized because you're a woman and, you know, you learned a more masculine way of working in a team environment. And so as a CVEB, you know, Community Action for Veterans can look at these transitions over time and, you know, help build that network of care around these types of social determinants of health, things like employment, housing, education, food security, support systems, and healthcare. And I have great hope that we, as a state, that we will create that type of meaningful impact over time. Question three, reflecting on those moments that matter, how can we come together as a more supportive veteran community to better address those key moments in tangible, impactful ways?
How can we be more supportive? First of all, not being competitive. If there's an organization, if there are organizations, multiple organizations that want to come together to support women veterans, there should be one banner. And that banner says Women Veterans. All the companies can be listed. All the organizations can be listed. However, just saying Women Veterans, period. Another thing, accountable. If organizations say that they are supporting women veterans, then find out. They must be able to quantify what they're doing. Are they holding events? Are they giving seminars? Are they providing services? Are they providing not just links, but those links that women are actually being serviced to get to where they want to be? The other thing is, you know, not getting involved in politics, but if you want to, great. But if those politicians, be it local, national, whatever, if they're not saying and they're not doing what you need them to do to represent you, then speak with your vote.
I would say that what's really important is having a collaborative outreach. we all are pieces of a puzzle. We have the VA, we have state departments, we have nonprofits, we have community resources. And it's important that all of us work together in order to acknowledge that women are veterans and that they sometimes have special needs that need to be addressed, and that all of us together can help. And I think it's very important that we meet the veterans where they are. That's why our Women Veteran Expos are so important. We take them across the state and meet women where they are, and we try to inform them on the things that are important to them in that time.
I think there's a disconnect between how the world works in the minds of service members and veterans and our civilian counterparts. As a woman veteran, I've been exposed to that darker side of the disconnect and have even been unfairly stereotyped within civilian workspaces and even within friend circles where I thought I was accepted and then I found out that I wasn't. And it's really hard when you have professional aspirations and these friendships that don't pan out, you know, and you're faced with remaking yourself over and over again. However, it's been in my experience that when I reach out to others as co-chair of Community Action for Veterans, when I nurture the idea of creating a positive impact around these issues, that people are stepping up. They want to help. They're eager to participate, and they are open to learning more about the veteran military culture, and we just need to give them the space to do that. What other advice, resources, or information would you like women veterans to be aware of, which might help them overcome challenges?
You know, again, it really goes back to reaching out. There are so many organizations. There are so many services. My own organization, 4Block, our entire mission is to help veterans find meaningful careers and their sense of purpose in their life after the military so that they can use all of the skill sets and all of the talents to reach their full potential. All of that is built on building relationships that are built on trust, building relationships that are authentic, building relationships that are not just, you know, not just connecting and networking, but actually building relationships that are built on trust, and everything revolves around that. I think that oftentimes, like I said before, women, we don't always, you know, want to reach out, but if you look at this from a sense of, you know, being your best self so that you can in turn come back and give to your own community, the best thing that you can do is to take care of yourself, to continue to improve. You know, we learn in the military that you know yourself and you seek improvement. Those things are important, but the only way to do that is by reaching out and using all of the tools that are available to us. It's really incredible how many more resources there are available to, you know, this generation, post 9/11 veterans, and there are to previous generations. And then also, I think one thing that's very important, once we have reached a point where we are able to, you know, feel its sense of purpose, that we turn around and pay it forward to other women veterans. I mean, it's a very difficult challenge. But I know that if in using all of the tools that are resources that are available, we can have meaning after life, after the military.
Ask the questions, attend the events, bring someone with you, speak up and speak out. No one knows our service better than we do. Support organizations. Some of the organizations, obviously, within the federal government, you have the Women's Bureau at the Department of Labor. Call them, email them, tell them they have connectivity to those businesses. Make sure that they know what you need in a place and space. There are committees that specifically study at the Department of Labor, employment. Make your voice be heard. The Center for Women Veterans at the VA, they're doing a phenomenal job. They've elevated that directorate to another level. Reach out to them as well. Final Salute, Inc., one of the organizations that I work with specifically in the place and space of homelessness and finding, giving and providing services and other things for women veterans. Hashtag invisible no more. There's also Women's Vet USA has a host of websites. Now, I will say there are a lot, and depending on what you need. So my thing to you is this. There are things out there. Please ask the questions today.
So I'd really like to speak a little bit and give a shout out to the VA Center for Women Veterans. I think there's a lot of information on their website. They do mini programs, women events, and they do research. And it's a great page to look at to find out what kind of research is being done on women veterans in the medical field and for services and benefits. Great papers out there for women to look at to see, you know, how they may benefit from some of the research that has been done. And I think the other thing that I'd really like to talk about is that, you know, as women, we sometimes need to be reminded that we are veterans. We took the oath just like everybody else. And so we need to reframe our minds if we don't believe that. And so look at yourself in the mirror and recognize that you are a veteran too. You may be a woman, and that's okay. But there's special services and benefits out there for us, and we need to take advantage of them. That is why they're there, and we want to make sure that you, as an individual, have everything that you need to have a great quality of life.
I think a woman veteran's greatest resource and her greatest challenge is herself. I believe that we must push through whatever experiences we had as service members and veterans and advocate for ourselves, both within the Veterans Administration and in the civilian workspaces. I would encourage other women veterans to write letters to their VA reps, talk to patient advocates, and find safe spaces to help them work out their feelings. And by bringing awareness of the issues you are facing into the light, you are advocating not just for your own health, but for the health and wellness of other women veterans. You know, I lived for many years with undiagnosed PTSD due to military sexual trauma. And it was only after my, I had some trauma as a parent that I really started to work on my personal issues and advocate for myself. And I know that sometimes, hiding out can be a much easier coping skill, but it won't get you anywhere. To truly start healing your bodies and our minds, we must walk the walk. If you only take one thing away from what I've said today, remember this. When you advocate for yourself, you will find the advice, resources, and information needed to fit your needs. We're all different. We all have different needs. But you are worth it, and I wish you luck on your journey.
Thank you very much, Jill, Michelle, Kata, and Wanda, for sharing your thoughts and your expertise with us today. It was both informative and insightful. I learned a lot. I would also like to thank everyone who joined us. We know you have busy lives, and we appreciate the time you have spent with us. If we were unable to answer your questions during this event, I encourage you to call the Women Veterans Call Center at 1-855-VA-WOMAN. For additional assistance, and as always, if you or any veteran you know or serve is ever at risk or in need of immediate assistance, please contact the Veterans Crisis Line at 1-800-273-8255. I would also like to invite you to join us for another live Women Together event today at 3 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. During this next hour-long Rally Point event, the VA, the American Legion Auxiliary, and the National Association of State Directors of Veterans Affairs will be answering questions around critical topics for women veterans, including health, benefits, appeals, employment, caregiver support, mental health, suicide prevention, memorial services, and survivor assistance. Wow. It also promises to be a very educational event. Again, I want to offer my respect and my gratitude to our panelists and to our audience for your service to our country. Please be well and stay well.
Well, thank you to the VA for that excellent panel discussion. We hope you found it informative. Now, in our second and next segment this evening, we will hear an interview of the chairwoman of the VA's Board of Veterans Appeals, Cheryl Mason, who will discuss current events with the Board of Veterans Appeals and the VA's Appeal Modernization Program. This was pre-recorded in January of 2020, but its information is still timely and very relevant. So, Doug, if you'll please play the second tape.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ashley Berry, your host of this special edition of VA News. More choice for veterans has been a priority of VA in recent years, and these efforts come in many forms. One example is the Appeals Modernization Act, where veterans now have greater choice in how VA reviews a disagreement with a VA claims decision. Joining us today to take a deeper look at the modernized appeals process is the chairman of the Board of Veterans Appeals, Cheryl Mason. Chairman Mason, welcome to this special edition of VA News. We're so happy to have you on today.
Thank you for having me today.
Cheryl, if you could tell us, why should a veteran opt into the new appeal system?
Really, it's what you said. It's about choice. The appeals modernization system was designed to give veterans primarily three things: choice, control, and clarity of their claims and appeals process. So that choice means they have options. They're no longer stuck in a situation and just spend years in that situation. They can now choose where they want to be. They can choose whether to put their claim in one lane, or move to an appeal at the Board of Veterans Appeals.
And I know that, you know, recently we have spoken and you've talked about certain veterans that have really benefited from this. Are you able to share maybe a personal story about what you've witnessed?
Well, I think probably the most personal story I can share, and this is not just really one veteran, I've heard from several, that they're really amazed that this new process really can be done so quickly. Primarily at Veterans Benefits Administration, because they're very much quicker than the board is. It's less than 4.5 months for them to get a decision, an initial decision. If they have a concern with that decision, they can then choose one of the two lanes. They get a quicker decision from there. If they don't like that, they can still come to the board. And what veterans are telling us, even the pace at the board is quicker. But in addition to all that, the board has also been able to pick up the pace with our legacy cases because of our increased staff, which has really been a blessing to all of our veterans to help them get their decisions quicker.
I mean, you must be so proud being in the VA for nearly, 26 years now?
Almost, yes.
You've really seen some advancements, and you've been instrumental in making them happen.
I have seen quite a few advancements over the period of time I've been at VA, but I really would say in the past 2 to 3 years, we've seen significant transformation. And part of that is the leadership team. The leadership team is definitely behind the transformation of what we're building for veterans and our commitment to making it better for veterans, from access to business transformation to just making it easier for them to talk to us and let us know what's going on through surveys. All of those areas are things we want veterans to be able to do.
Absolutely. And I think it would be really helpful if you could let us know how a veteran sort of knows which lane to choose.
First and foremost, we always advise veterans to work with their representative, because the veterans representatives understand the process really well. And while we have made it easier, it's still a little confusing to our veterans because it's different. So veterans representatives can really advise them about what they need to do. There are, again, three lanes: the higher level review lane, the supplemental claim lane. Those are both at the agency of original jurisdiction, which would be either VBA, VHA, or NCA, so cemetery benefits or health. And in that situation, the veteran has the option to go into one of those lanes after the initial decision, and it's going to be quicker, and they're going to get a resolution, which could be positive. And so if they do that, they're not waiting longer to come to the board. They can still, their third option is always to come to the board, and that's actually new, because before you had to go through several gates to get to the board. Now the veteran can choose, if they don't want to go through the other two options, to come directly to the board. At the board, we have three options as well. One of those is what we refer to as the direct lane, which we are doing those cases in an average of 365 days.
Okay, terrific. You know, the VA and the board implemented massive changes over the past year that have positively impacted veterans. And I know that you have a really exciting announcement that you would like to share with everyone that will really, truly impact these veterans in a positive way.
Yes, we are very, very excited about the virtual hearing program that the board is currently testing, and we expect to roll that out in 2020. And what that will enable veterans to do, much like you see the telehealth appointment process right now, where veterans can use their phones, their computers, their iPads to talk to a doctor, you'll be able to do the same thing with a judge, and that's actually happening right now. From your home, you'll be able to go into the VA network. Your representative will meet you on the network, so it's all on the VA network. You'll be able to have a hearing with your judge, so you won't have to travel for 6 hours across a state to come to a hearing. Or if you're not in a situation where it's healthy for you to travel, you don't have to do that. You can do that from home. We're very excited about it. To date, we've held about 155 of these hearings successfully. Everything is looking good so far. We're very excited because we have the Strategic Partnership Initiative. So we're looking forward to what other opportunities this will open doors for our veterans to have access to those hearings, which will get decisions out the door to veterans quicker.
Absolutely. And you're talking about the partnership initiatives. What sort of do you envision moving forward and working with partners?
Well, a couple of the areas we use phones, for example. Mm-hmm. We have parts of the United States that sometimes it's a challenge to even get connectivity. So that's an area that we're hoping to explore with our partners on how we can support our veterans to get connectivity for that hearing so that we can hold that hearing so they don't have to travel 4 or 5 hours for a hearing, especially in not so nice weather in some of our states in the winter.
Absolutely. And I find it, you know, really helpful, I think, when you think about the veteran in their home, being able to talk to the judge. This can be very stressful. Mm-hmm. The drive can be very stressful. So you have to imagine that there is a significant improvement in the mental wellness being offered to veterans without even really trying. It's more of convenience, but that, too, is really rewarding, I would think.
It is, and that's very important to me personally. Mm-hmm. I'm very engaged in the mental wellness and suicide prevention process that we're working in the department with Prevents, and I want to do everything we can do to support our veterans in that process. And if that means making the hearing process a little more comfortable for them, That's what we want to do, because it is scary for some of our veterans to hold a hearing with a judge who they've never seen before. They don't know what to expect. And so we do want to continue VA's mission to be helpful and be paternal in our veterans and make sure we're taking care of them, because that's our mission, is to take care of our veterans.
Absolutely. And as the chairman of the board, my last question is, for those that don't quite understand how this works, or those that are a little skeptical, wait a minute, what would your advice be, or how would you encourage them to try it?
I would advise them to, as I often say, roll the dice. Step in and see what works. Mm-hmm. Technology can be scary. Yeah. We understand that. If you're really not comfortable, ask your representative for assistance. They can help you. And in the process we've changed with appeals modernization, I would really advise our veterans to go to the higher level review and the supplemental claim first. Again, it's quicker. It's going to be, it's going to have the resolution capability before having to wait at the board. It will take longer at the board. So those are the two things I would tell our veterans to step out there, because we are making a difference and we do want to help them where they sit, because that's what access is about.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for all you're doing, Chairman Mason. We certainly appreciate your time today. And that is it for this special edition of VA News. I'm Ashley Berry. Thank you for your service, and thank you for watching.
Well, thanks to the VA and to BVA Chairwoman Cheryl Mason for that news and insight about the Board of Veterans Appeals and the Appeals Modernization Act. Rick, we've got about 5 minutes before our third segment. What are your thoughts on what you heard and your own experience with the BVA?
Well, it sounds very nice, and I will have to say that I've seen some improvements. You know, you know, David, I do a lot of these hearings from my office. Veteran comes in, and it is, I think, a little bit easier on them. You know, they don't have to make the big trip down to St. Pete, which for some of them can be 2 to 3 hours. And we know what that's about. Then you have to get down there and sit around and wait. It's very institutionalized down there. You sit in the cafeteria, whereas you come to my office, and it's an extension of my house, and you can come in, and my staff gives you some coffee and some fruit, and you sit there and you relax, and then we just walk you right in, and it is a lot easier. And I have found that you know, the judges that I've been appearing in front of go out of their way to try to make the veteran feel very comfortable. So, you know, I think it definitely the system's gotten better in that regard. You and I both agree that we feel that the BVA decisions have been, you know, more favorable and very thoughtful. But then you got the same problem. Another problem, though, is when the BVA remands these cases back to the VA, David, as you know, it can take forever. I mean, I've got a number of these cases that are pending on remand, waiting for the VA to do their examinations per the order of the BVA. And that can get very frustrating for myself. It gets very frustrating for the veteran. And then I've recently run into a situation where the VA turned around, issued a supplemental statement of the case, claiming that my client never even showed up for an examination, so they just turned around and denied and sent the case back to the BVA, when in fact they canceled the hearing or the examination, and we've got documentation to show that we did everything we could to try to reschedule, and instead of rescheduling, they just turned around and denied it. So, you know, it's everything's a work in progress, but I would have to agree with the chairwoman that I think it's better than it has been. How about you, David? What are you finding?
I agree. I think that that the quality of the BVA decisions has greatly improved over the last 2 to 3 years. I think their decisions are often issued a little sooner. I'm not going to say fast, but compared to what they used to be, sometimes you can get a relatively quick decision. I think something that ought to be considered, and I know you've had actually quite an exceptional experience with some of your virtual hearings, or most of your virtual hearings, as you explained to me, where the judges may give you an hour, even longer, mm-hmm. hearing time. But what I found before COVID was that the hearings at the regional office level, where you were at the regional office, but there were video hearings through, you know, live videotaping, basically, with the judge who was up in Washington, the judges were now holding people to a 30-minute hearing, which to me is certainly not enough time to present most cases that are on appeal, because most cases that are on appeal tend to be more complicated for any number of reasons, maybe the number of issues, maybe the complexity of the issues, and 30 minutes is not enough. What I've found is that everything that we need to submit to the BVA for the veteran, whether it's written statements from the veteran, family members, buddy statements from people they serve with, medical records, medical nexus opinions, that we have a complete written package. It's worth considering, at least, waiving the hearing, because you can also get a faster decision, because as in the BVA lane, the BVA hearing lane under the new system, there are three lanes within that lane. One is that you don't ask for hearing and you're not going to submit any new evidence. The second lane is no hearing, but you're going to submit new evidence within 90 days. And then the third and the slowest lane is you're going to ask for a hearing. And I realize strategically sometimes that wait for a hearing can be necessary in order to actually strengthen the case, get medical opinions, et cetera. But it is something to consider. So There's a lot to it. Thanks to the BVA for providing that interview. Now, we need to go on to the third and final segment. In this last segment, Rick, if you'd like to introduce it.
Yeah, in our third segment this evening, we will hear from the VA about benefits and services available to those who served in the Reserve and National Guard components of our military, and who sometimes feel forgotten by the military and by the VA because they are not in the regular full-time active duty forces. Doug, please roll tape number 3.
As a National Guard or Reserve member, your VA, the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs, honors your service and is ready to serve you.
I wouldn't be here today as a successful woman without the help that I received from the Reserve and paid for my education and the compensation that VA gave me.
VA benefits can provide support in areas such as disability compensation, insurance, loan guarantee, pension, health care, education, dependents and survivors, burial, and vocational rehabilitation and employment. And this support often transcends generations.
What's important about VA benefits is they don't just touch you as an individual. They can touch your parents, maybe your grandparents, your child.
Serving in a reserve component of our armed forces has a unique status with different levels of service obligations. Your eligibility for some VA benefits requires a certain amount of time of active service. Active service can be active duty in the form of an overseas deployment as part of a unit mobilization or full-time National Guard duty. Even if you're a traditional reservist or technician, where you're reporting for training once a month and 2 weeks a year, you may be eligible for some VA benefits, such as home loan guarantee and education, based on your length of service. At benefits.va.gov/guard-reserve, you can learn about and apply for your VA benefits. Some of the benefit programs relate to having a service-connected disability, whether that disability occurred during a training period or during active duty.
If your disabilities continue to worsen, they will work with you, so it's always there. It's a benefit that I can always have access to because of my disability.
Zarina Prichet Cole served in the Army and then spent nearly 6 years as a traditional reservist. During her time on active duty, she experienced a crush injury, a condition that got worse after her separation from the reserves. With her ability to type or write severely limited, she turned for help to VA's Vocational Rehabilitation and Employment, or VOC Rehab program, which provides career preparation and independent living services to veterans with a service-connected disability.
My injury was beginning to bother me at work. It was affecting my productivity at work, and I was concerned about losing my job. So I applied for VOC Rehab, and what they did, they took me through a series of rehabilitation testing and worksite evaluation, and then they were able to ascertain what I needed on the job that would help me to be more proficient.
Through her VR&E benefit, Zarina was trained to use voice recognition software, a tool that's really helped her at the office. She also receives VA disability compensation for her service-connected injury. This monthly benefit amount varies depending on the severity of the disability, as well as when spouses or dependent children are factored in. For Zarina, that extra support has made a big difference.
There was a time where things were a little tight, and having that benefit from the VA really helped me get over that hump. And so I was just very happy that the benefits really helped my family.
While many benefit programs meet needs associated with service-connected disabilities, there are many benefits available to National Guard members and reservists, like education and home loan guarantee, with much broader eligibility.
I had no way of paying for college, no way of paying for school, and the military gave me that way, and it continues to.
Derek Smith's nearly quarter century of service in the armed forces includes 7 years in the Army National Guard. With a call-up in 2003, Derek became eligible for post-9/11 GI Bill benefits.
I just finished a master's degree recently, and now I'm working on another degree as well. So the military made that all possible. My veterans' benefits made that all possible.
With a VA-guaranteed home loan, he's achieved other big goals as well.
My wife and I were able to pick the home that we wanted. It was basically our dream home. We were able to pay a small amount down, and we were able to get into the house, and we're still in it today.
Like Derek, many National Guard or Reserve members are eligible for multiple benefits. To keep track of what he receives, Derek uses eBenefits, the VA and DOD's online benefits portal, where you can review educational benefit amounts, calculate home loan eligibility, and apply for other VA benefits.
E-benefits have been wonderful to me. I don't have to pick up the phone and call anybody, even though they're available as well. But I've been able to answer most of my own questions just by checking online.
While many benefits can be secured today, others, like VA insurance benefits, are available to provide security both during and after your service in the National Guard or Reserves ends.
The very first benefit you're entitled to when you join the military is Service Members Group Life Insurance.
Mike Carr serves in the West Virginia Air National Guard. As a traditional Guard member, he was automatically enrolled in Service Members Group Life Insurance, or SIGLI.
It's kind of like out of sight, out of mind, but you know you have a peace of mind with insurance benefits. So it's really one of those, it's kind of like an unsung hero of all VA benefits, I think.
All Guard members and reservists are covered under SIGLI. But when you're separating or retiring, converting SIGLI coverage must be done within certain time limits.
If you are thinking about getting out of the Guard, you convert over to either Veterans Group Life Insurance or a commercial policy, because again, you can do so without proof of good health.
Veterans Group Life Insurance, or VGLI, provides lifetime renewable term coverage regardless of health. And if you have a service-connected disability, Service-Disabled Veterans Insurance can provide coverage at affordable premiums. For Mike, VA insurance is part of a package of benefits that have made a big impact in his life.
I've been tremendously satisfied with the VA benefits that I've received. They were able to help me get a college education, enjoy the privileges of home ownership, so it's been very beneficial to me.
Even if you separated years ago from the National Guard or Reserves, your eligibility for benefits may still remain.
I lost 6 years of compensation because I thought I wasn't entitled to benefits because 6 years had elapsed. No matter what the time is, apply for your benefits. You earn them. VA is ready to help you. Just apply and let them make that decision.
You've served your country, and VA is ready to serve you with benefits including disability compensation, insurance, loan guarantee, pension, health care, education, dependents and survivors, burial, and vocational rehabilitation and employment. Achieve your next mission. Learn about and apply for your VA benefits today.
Well, thank you to the VA for that informative tape regarding benefits and services available to those who served in the Reserve and Guard components. We know, especially since 2001, the country has relied extremely heavily on the Reserve and Guard components for overseas deployments, and many individuals and units have deployed, been called to active duty multiple times. So it's important that they realize that they do have some VA benefits. Now, we're running to the close of our show tonight, so let's go back over to Rick Hurley.
Yeah, let's go to our coaching in the care program that we always talk about when we close out. This is a very important program, and I like to remind veterans and their families about it. It helps veterans having difficulty transitioning to home life. Returning home can be a tough adjustment, and loved ones can help. Coaching in the care helps you try to achieve that independent life that you are searching for when you discharge from the service. Coaching in the Care offers free coaching to help you help your veterans. Give the program a call at 1-888-823-7458. The hours are Monday through Friday, 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Again, Coaching in the Care's number is 1-888-823-7458. In addition, I'd like to once again remind listeners that if you know a veteran who is suicidal or in a crisis of any kind, the U.S. Department of Veteran Affairs also has a Veterans Crisis Line to help. Call 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Many veterans have committed suicide because they did not get the help they needed. Help them get the care they need to cope with their problems. Once again, Veterans Crisis Line is 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. That's 1-800-273-8255 and press 1. Back to you, David.
Well, we'd like to thank all of you for listening to the Veterans News Hour here on BBS Radio Station 1. I'd like to thank our sponsors, Corey and Hurley Law Group, which represents veterans and disability cases across the country. I'd like to thank our producer at BBS Radio, Mr. Doug Newsom. We hope you'll tune in next week, 7 p.m. Eastern, 6 Central, 5 Mountain, 4 p.m. Pacific Time, here on BBSRadio.com Station 1 for another edition of the Veterans News Hour. Until then, stay safe and stay healthy.
Thank you for listening to the Veterans News Hour with David Corey and Richard Hurley. We hope you found this week's program very informative. Be sure to invite your friends and all the veterans you know to tune in next week when we'll have another great show on veterans issues. Meanwhile, you can listen to our other recorded episodes on the Veterans News Hour webpage on VBSRadio.com. Thanks again for listening to the Veterans News Hour.